2 Corinthians chapter 9. So we've talked about, really, as you noted, we've talked about grace a lot this month. And I got to be honest, I think for me and maybe you, it's a word that I've been afraid to use because it's one of those that sometimes it's misused so much that society and religion hijacks terms and religion can hijack ideas, biblical teachings, biblical doctrines away from us because we're concerned about doing it wrong because there are aspects of this that are not appropriate. And so, honestly, sometimes I'm afraid to even use the word grace. But we shouldn't be, and I shouldn't be. So these lessons have helped me develop that, and I hope it has you as well, to see the important aspect of grace in our life and how we interact with others. I did want to tie in as we introduce the lesson here. Grace has been a common thought, actually, at least certain aspects of it, because we even talked about the gracious speech as we talk to one another. Remember that was brought out there, how we can be gracious as we talk to each other and aspects of that. And we also talked about doing good or thankfulness. You know, we talked about that. I just did a couple of lessons on that, but thankfulness is so important for our perspective, if nothing else, right? And then stewardships of our ability. I use Galatians 6. There's so many lessons that, as I've gone through this, there's a lot of lessons, a lot of material that we probably overlooked, and I know we did. But the big gain from that is we all possess an ability. We possess an ability. We may not possess all of them. None of us possess all of them, and that's okay. But whether it's in the spiritual realm or physical realm, we all have some ability. And we talked about utilizing that, putting that to use. And that's been a continuous thought this month of December as we talked about stewardship, about using what we have. And as I thought about and prepared the lesson for today, I knew I wanted another lesson because there are some parts of it we didn't cover. There's going to be a little bit of overlap, but as I thought back, our lesson last week was really about excess, right? It's about going above and beyond. It's not about putting on the scales and saying this is what's just, because that's not grace, and it's not mercy. And we talked about examples that showed how people, including Jesus, but not just Jesus or God, it was also servants who did things to an excess, beyond what was deserved, beyond what was could be repaid, beyond what was even considered to be the best situation, where the woman who anointed Jesus with the expensive oil, a year's worth of wages in that oil, and she anointed Jesus with it. Right? We talked. And so I kind of looking back, and that lesson was really about excess and the nature of grace is how it goes above and beyond, kind of the idea. And today I want to take and step back and again, maybe a little bit overlapping, but we're going to use 2 Corinthians and we're going to talk about the tone in our graciousness and the idea of being loving graciousness. Our ability to love being gracious, love giving, and love giving beyond what's deserved. And I've titled it Our Tone. And in my mind, I was trying to differentiate how last week's lesson of being about the methodology and how it's excessive, it's grace, it's grace and it's mercy, merciful, it's not justice, versus this time it's loving doing that. Actually finding joy, pleasure, and out of being gracious. And so 2 Corinthians 9 in particular is about the collection for the church. It's about giving. So again, it's a specific context, but I don't intend to spend time deciphering and dealing with doctrinal issues about it. I just want to look at what the tone is that Paul teaches the Corinthians, and this can be applied and should be applied in all aspects of our life as we go about doing good. And so here in 2 Corinthians 9, verse 5 through 7, the first point I want to look at is verse 5. He gives four contrasts, I believe, here. That's how I'm going to present the lesson. Bountifully, not by extortion. Oh, I love that word, extortion. That one stands out to you, or me anyways. It might to you. But when you hear the word extortion, That's not what we want in any way, shape, or form, right? But here in chapter 9, verse 5, I thought it necessary, the King James is what I'm reading from. I actually like Tyler's version better, but I don't have that one, and I don't have it memorized. So in lieu of him reading for us through the lesson, I'll read from the King James version. Paul says, I thought it necessary to exhort or encourage the brethren that they would go before unto you and make up beforehand your bounty, whereof you had noticed before that the same might be ready as a matter of bounty and not as a matter of covetousness. So it's being bountiful versus covetousness or extortion, another versions would use. So it's a tone of generosity. Bountiful, beyond. That word bountiful there is really an odd use of it, quite frankly. It's eulogy. Now, eulogy is about being flattering in all practical purposes, right? You're speaking well of somebody or something. And so it's above what might even be deserved. Again, it's kind of got that tone about it, a tone of generosity, right? And so loving generosity, a loving graciousness, about being generous. It's about of excess, about a lesson last week, right? So literally, it's the Greek word eulogy. That's a transliteration of that Greek word, but it's about being the flattering or beyond, right? Versus covetousness or extortion. And that's what their gift was supposed to be. It was supposed to be of that nature. Their gracious tone, it was to be bountiful or generous. And as he shows there, also bountifully compared to sparingly. In verse 6, we continue reading. But this I say, he who sows sparingly shall reap sparingly. We probably remember that term. That was also in Galatians 6. So he that sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he which sows bountifully shall reap bountifully. So there's our bounty word again, or generous and sparingly. So and the idea here of reaping and sowing is a farming metaphor, a farming analogy, because when you go out and sow in the field, you're only going to get back of what you sow and what God blesses you with and how much effort you put into it, right? All things got to come together there. But the idea is believe in God's part, all right? If I'm going to go out and sow a field, I'm going to take this bag of seed and I'm going to take what, in our culture, we live in a bountiful culture. We have so much security of what we have, but you roll back 200 years and before, you're looking at food. You know, somebody's saying, look, we can eat for the next week or two on these seeds, or we go plant them in the field. You know, we might get hungry come July. Maybe we want to keep this seed and eat it now. Right? So that's in the farming cultures, how am I going to survive? I've got food in my hand. Am I going to bury it in the ground? Do you trust God? Because a lot of bad things can happen when you bury it in the ground, but so does a lot of good things. So look, believe in God's part. It's an exhibition of trust in God's promise to bless the giver. If a farmer goes out and prays that God blesses his crop, as he plants his seed and invests all this time, effort, money, and resources into planting, he hopes and prays God blesses that. Because there could be a drought. There could be a drought. And it's not a disheartened effort. For gardeners, last summer, at least for us, in the West family, it was kind of hard. It got dry early, the garden kind of struggled a little bit, right? You ever plant something, think, well, this thing's just going to die anyways. You ever had that? You ever done that? It's kind of disheartening. You don't put a lot of effort into it, not a lot of care. My uncles, the story went, they had a, their my grandpa gave them a bag of bean seed full of boll weevils. It all had holes all in it. And they go out there and they're like, these things ain't gonna come up. Dad's nuts. Grandpa, you know, my grandpa, he don't know what he's talking about. This ain't gonna work. And so the story went, they just chunked them out there in the field. And they said, you know, doggone it, every one of those stupid things came up. Plant with diligence, not half-hearted. They was like, they didn't believe in it. This isn't gonna work. This ain't gonna do any good. They're not gonna grow. They're not gonna sprout. Believe in it. What we do when you put the plow in the ground and put the seed in the ground, believe it, something good is going to happen. Yeah, there could be a drought, and it may come of nothing. They're not good, not very good. But we have to believe in the process. And that's for the farmer, that's what this is about. And for us, if we're giving, believe in it. It's going to be good. It's going to do good. don't have a disheartened effort in doing good. So have a tone of bountiful generosity in that. Because there's all kinds of reasons to not give. There always is, right? There's always reasons to not give. And so those analogies occurred to me, and I thought they were so appropriate. You know, it's just true. Sometimes we know it's going to be tough in the summer. It's going to take a lot of work and diligence to make it work out, and it's going to take God and His part. Realize, in our giving is the same way. I'm pretty sure my uncle's got a beating over, a whipping over that. You know, Grandpa didn't take kindly to things not going correctly. They had clear instructions to go plant them seeds, and they just chunked them out there because they just knew they wasn't going to work. You know, not a disheartened effort, but an exhibition of trust in God. Trust in God, that God's going to bring results from what we do. And this is all given in the context of giving materially to those who are in need. That's the context, is giving material to those who are in need. So this is just even say blind faith. See, I'm just going to trust that God's going to make this work the best, you know? And so put a good, honest effort into it. The idea of from the heart in verse 7. That every man, according his purpose in his heart, so let him give. Not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. The tie from the heart is tied in the language, from the heart versus necessity. You know, Paul had to sell them on this was a need. This was an important need. But to balance that is, yes, there is a need, but it's got to be what you want. Yes, there's an urgency, but you've got to want to do this yourself. Don't do it because I'm telling you to do it. Don't do it because I'm putting pressure on you. And you know Paul had to balance that. But there's the idea that we have to have a love for the work. It's our desire. It's our passion. As we give of our means, give of our abilities, whatever the abilities may be, material is so easy to make the application. But it's not just material. It's our spiritual applications as well. But so have a love for the work from our heart. Nobody should coerce us or intimidate us into giving. That's not part of this. That is a part of the religious culture we live in. I have some stories of that. But it's not what we're here about. The giving is to be what you desire. And we should be satisfied with that. Right? And Paul, he laid it on very serious to them. Look, they're all needy. And look, we need to do this now. But his intention was not to force them to give. It's to encourage them, to inspire them. And he balances that and said, look, you do it from your heart, though. There is a need. It is urgent, but you do it from your heart. And that'd be the same for us today. There's always a need. There's always a use. But we do it from the heart, what we want, what we desire. And then the cheerfully and not grudgingly. Again, the cheerful, that's actually transliterated. The Greek word is hilarious. I always remember that. You can remember that. That just sticks in my mind. Hilarious. The idea is being prompt and eager, willing to give, not reluctant. Again, from the heart. From the heart, what we desire. We do have to be careful. This is one of the things, we'll draw lessons from this, is we can sometimes look at, this is going to cost me something. And if we look at it from a cost, it's about the perspective, right? But our tone should be cheerful and not begrudging. What I draw from this, as we look at the tone that we have as we give of our resources, whatever they are. This you know, materials is easy to make application, but bountifully, generously, not to be extorted from us, not to be not through intimidation and those kind of things, right? Bountifully, not stingily, from the heart, not because of necessity, not because you think you have to, but because you want to and you desire to, and promptly and eagerly because you want to, and not begrudging of that. And so from this, I want to draw some lessons now. Because you probably picked up on some as we went. And the first lesson I want to, it goes back to really our first lesson on this from Galatians 6, that we all have unique abilities. We all have unique personal abilities, unique material wealth. Our time is just as valuable as our money is, right? It's easy to pull a dollar out of our pocket. In our day, drove my dad crazy because he always worked on the premise he had more time than he had money. And I worked on the opposite principle. And he's like, son, you don't have to spend money on that. I've got that boat around here somewhere. And I know I'm going to spend it because I know I can get it done. I get it done now and we can move on. So we had different concepts. So we all have different amounts of these resources. It's just the physical, temporal. But they apply. You know, that's what this chapter 9 is about, is the material. And then there's a spiritual, whether it be our fruits of the Spirit that we are well developed or whatever, our ability to encourage and inspire and showing mercy and those kind of things. We all have different gifts in this regard. We all have different abilities. None of us are the same. And so whether we can teach or preach is not the most important thing. It's whether with the ability we have, we use it. Whether we lead a prayer or whether we offer a Lord's Supper talk or just encourage those we're around. We all have an ability. And to use that, but to recognize we all have unique. We all have an opportunity. I think we should realize and look at the world that, yes, we are going to have an opportunity. We may not always recognize it, and that may be true. It's easy to overlook those opportunities, but we all have them. And so realize that. Then put our abilities to use, whatever they are. It's not by coercion. There's no good to coerce somebody into doing things. That's not what the gospel's about. That's not what our work's about. But he does sell, in this case, Paul was selling the need and urgency to the Corinthians. Volunteering with in society, helping wherever you might find a place to help. We have Debbie and I have just volunteered with the YMCA. There's a housing building downtown. Basically, it's a housing place for people who are trying to get out of homelessness. So all of them people, maybe all of them, at one time lived somewhere along the river in a tent. 10 cities, and they're on their way up. We volunteered over there. It's just all we did was walk, but you know what? We met people. We talked to people. There's doors to be opened there, and I don't know what those might be. It may not ever come to anything. A lot of times stuff doesn't, but when you put yourself out there, you give yourself opportunity to interact, opportunity to teach, opportunity to influence people, and that is just about time. All that was time. Helping people with transportation, helping neighbors with their project, it's not uncommon, helping your neighbor clear their driveway of snow. We live in the duplex we lived in Idaho, that we both shared a common parking pad. Well, obviously my neighbor wasn't too concerned about clearing their side off, so occasionally I would clear it off, just to, the idea is, we are people who care about you. It's the ability to show empathy and sympathy for others, and that was one of the key points about Jesus. That's one of the great attributes of Jesus. He was able to sympathize with us, Hebrews 2 and Hebrews 4. When we do these things, we are able to show empathy and sympathy for them, whatever culture or environment we find ourselves in. And it matters. People see these things. And we're all qualified to do something on some level, give somebody a ride somewhere. It was a great blessing. I think most of us got to meet Jason. I got to take him to the hospital for his treatments that he had probably 6 or 8 times. I got to spend with him. That was cool. It was just the fact that I could be there. And we talk about things. And it's amazing. I've just been, it's been amazing to me how much people interact with you if you show them a little love, as it will. Show them a little sympathy. Be there for them. People will share all kinds of things. They'll open up and talk. And that's your chance to shine. It's your chance, our chance, to be the gospel to them. Let's see God living in us And at a minimum, they say, that's maybe, hopefully they see that that's a life. I want to be like that. I want to have that hope. I want to have that faith. I want to have that joy. And that's something they aspire to. It's just amazing when you interact with people on a kind of personal level. They'll open up and talk. You know, I got a friend here that, you know, we was talking one day, and he just about shot his dad because his dad was beating his mom. And he told me this story. And we talk about stuff like that, you know. And we talk about righteousness. He hadn't come to church yet. Hopeful, maybe. But just being out there, our sympathy and empathy we show to others is seen. They see that. And in some way, it's not fair for me, I guess, because I've got a wide open door, because the first thing I'm introduced, I'm a preacher. So my friend at the trailer park has told everybody he knows that I'm a preacher. So I've already got a reputation. I hope it's all good. But mostly, I think it is. Right? So that word is spread because I got the title. Right? But people will see us as Christians too. That guy's a Christian. That guy helps people. You know, go talk to him. He's got things together. She's got things together. Whatever it is. The idea of our demonstration of graciousness affects people's lives. They see it. They will see it. And they will respond to it. And it's not that we do some great work. It's not. It's not. There's nothing. Nothing's just outstanding about helping somebody clean their driveway off, or listening to them, or sitting talking to someone who's having an anxiety attack. That happened last year. Just listen, just talk, try to get their mind off of it. But when they do that, to me, think about this. If they are at the point of sharing with you very personal things, you're there. That door's open. They're listening. You have that chance to influence them. And a lot of that comes out of this idea of being gracious and loving it. The people will respond. Believe in our work, right? Optimism and diligence in reaping and sowing. That's the whole point about this farming analogy. Believe in it. Be diligent. Be optimistic. Don't be like my uncles and take that bag of seed, just chuck them out there because it ain't going to matter anyways. This stuff ain't going to grow. There ain't going to be no rain this summer. This stuff's going to die. Let God do His part. Be diligent. Be optimistic. Let God do His part. I remember when I was still a teenager. 401Ks just come out, I guess, in the late 80s, maybe, whatever it was. And the old guys, I don't know how old they were now, but I was a kid, so everybody was old. You got to put money away. I'm like, I don't get to put money away. I need to eat today. I want to do stuff today. I don't have everything I want today. I can't put money away. I didn't believe in the future. I believed in the now. I believe in that meal I could get at home, or you know, that steak I might could buy, or whatever I can get a. You know, I want to, you know, at that time we want a larger home, or we want another car, or a new car. Are we investing in our future? That's what 401k is about. It's about investing in your future. That's what sowing seed is, about investing in the future. And maturely we get it, and we realize, I didn't put money away when I was 18 years old. I can tell you that. I wouldn't put none in the 401k. But it's like that planting the garden. If I'm sitting there with a bag of seed, I'm hungry today. Let's just boil these beans up. We'll eat them today. We'll eat today. Don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but we eat today. Or in summer. Well, the next winter, right? That's all that idea of that looking forward. Those analogies made there. So believe in God and His work. When it comes to reaping and sowing, the idea is believe in God and the work He does, that He's going to assist us as we go about. He's going to bless us as we do our work. So believe in that. Whether it's material or spiritual, He'll bless it. He has that ability, and that's what I think the lesson we should draw from that is. Also, finding joy in serving and sacrificing. Sometimes we may have to look for reasons. We may feel a burden. We may feel like it's costing us too much. And I think that's one of the deals is we realize that the eagerness and cheerful, generously and excessively, bountifully as we're sowing the field. So finding reasons to be joyful in our work, recognizing the value, getting away from the idea that it's cost me something or it's that some type of injury. Because if I look at it as an injury, I'm just going to have the wrong attitude about it. I need to look at it and learn how to see things from the good that's going to happen. You know, that there's going to be good come from this. There's an article that I've not used yet, but it gave the story about two kids. And you'll love this, right? And so they have the ark, they're playing ark, you know. One kid has their animals, and the other kid has their animals, and they're all saving their animals. They're in the boat, and the flood's over, and they run the bathtub, and now we've got to have a sacrifice. And they look at each other, you're not sacrificing my animal. The other kids, well, you're not sacrificing mine. These are my animals, and those are your animals. I'm going to sacrifice your animal. I'm going to sacrifice my animal. I don't give up my toy. And the story goes, as well, you know what? We got this old junky doll in the garage. We'll sacrifice that to God in the story. Well, we get that, right? We don't always want to give of what we have. We want to give what everybody else has. You know, it's better if you give what you've got, because I want to keep what I've got. And that's just a classic, you know, that's the way kids think. You know, this one's mine. I don't want to sacrifice my animal. You sacrifice your animal. We'll sacrifice your animal. That way it don't cost me anything. You know, the idea, this is not a cost. Being able to see past the injury part of it, see past the cost to see the good that was done. A smile on a kid's face or a person's face or, you know, there's just lots of ways I think we can see and find joy in serving and working in that regard. It's not just about us, it's about others. And I think you can see that. And that maybe makes the point, especially Galatians 6:9 in particular, but our scripture reading that I've had in our bulletin in the back of it for the month. But Galatians 6:9 in the same context of giving, don't be weary in well-doing. So don't let it be weary you. Not weary that it's a cost, and it maybe it's an incurred injury over time. It continues on. Don't look at it as an injury. Don't be weary in doing good. Be encouraged by it, and be happy about it. Be joyful that you have this opportunity, whatever you get a chance to do. Find joy in that. And I'll leave you with this, and it's the same as last week, actually. I think it's the identical slide, almost identical if not. Mercy will be shown in kind. That just reminds us of our standing here. The importance that we have this in our life. Mercy will be blessed and merciful because they will obtain mercy. Those who live in the world of only judgment, that only what is just is done, will not receive mercy. That's James 2:13. He will have judgment without mercy for those who do not show mercy. The idea of being gracious is so important. And our lesson today is about loving graciousness. Do you love graciousness? And maybe that's something, some parts of this might challenge you. I know it's, for me it does, and it's been a credible study for me. There's just so much in our text about our attitude towards others in this regard, like we talked about last week, being gracious, being merciful, doing things in excess of being compassionate. Those are all attitudes behind it, but also today, loving graciousness, to do it with joy, to do it eagerly. And I hope you could take that away and maybe some way help you in your own life. Have you accessed the grace of God? It's our invitation today. Have you accessed the grace of God? We're going to sing song number 612 in just a second. God offers His grace in that we can be forgiven of our sins by no merit of our own, but is contingent upon our ability to say, Thy will be done, which was be baptized. And upon baptism, you will have access to God's grace in that regard, and your sins will be forgiven of nothing that you merit. And if you've begun the Christian life and stumbled along the way, or if something maybe we could help you with that would help you get back on the right track, we encourage you to share that with us as well. So we want to help you in any way. So won't you do that as we stand, as we sing our song of encouragement.